This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Acre is the home of the Art Park with 13 installations in the Study Center, WGXC Acre Studio, and the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
My name is Justin, and this is Ginger Radio Hour, live on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. Today on Ginger Radio Hour, Greene County's very own E-Team. They have a new exhibition at Create Gallery in Catskill, which is co-organized by Wave Farm. And E-Team was gracious enough to come into the studio a couple of weeks ago and record a conversation with me and Natasha, my partner and uber media theorist and arts writer. So much more of that coming up, including I'm going to play an audio excerpt of E-Team's work that you can see right now in Catskill. Much more on that soon. But first, let's open this up with a track from the new Sufjan Stevens album. Enjoy.
Thank you. must converge, everything rises.
That was Blonde Redhead, the track Via Savona. I'm Justin, and this is Ginger Radio Hour, live on WGXC Acre, 90.7 FM. Got a track here underneath, which is Hiroshi Yoshimura, which I think will perfectly set us up for today. I'm going to turn it down just a touch. I like that. About a year ago, my partner and collaborator, Natasha, and I were invited to visit the studio V-Team here in Greene County. Which is the dream, right? To have a couple of artists invite you into their studio and show off their work in a very personal, intimate way. They have a beautiful studio and, of course, incredible work. Plus, they fed us. We drank wine. It was really a lovely evening. And that night, they showed us some of the work that turned into their new show, which is called Our Non-Understanding of Everything. It's a multi-channel video installation, which just opened last weekend at Create Gallery in Catskill. Natasha and I went to the opening. They've really transformed the space. And because I could never perfectly describe what you will see and hear there, I think what I'd like to do instead is to play an interview, a conversation that Natasha and I had with E-Team. E-Team, of course, is made up of the artists Franzi Lamprecht and Ayo Moderegger. And over the course of a couple of years, they've been making this video work. It all began in Taiwan, but I think I'm getting too far ahead of myself here. First of all, what drew me to this work was their incredible video and editing work and sound design, paired with video in our very forests and mountains and streams here in Greene County. E-Team has been interacting with animals and insects, wafers, technology, smartphones. All sorts of incredible things have been happening right here in Greene County in the woods. So maybe the first way to dive into E-Team's work is to play the audio part of one of their videos that you can now see in Catskill. So let me set that up. Again, E-Team has created a multi-channel video installation. But sound design and sound is very, very important to them, and they'll discuss that here in a bit. So let me play a little bit of that audio. Stand by. You're listening to E-Team's Our Understanding, excuse me, Our Non-Understanding of Everything, number 12. One of many videos you can see right now in Catskill at the new show at Create Gallery. It's on through mid-November. As I was saying before, Franzi and Io, we're in Taiwan, and that's where the beginning of this project really took off. And so I'm going to play, let's just dive in to our conversation. You're going to hear many voices here. First you will hear, first you will hear Franzi describing this initial time in Taiwan. Io is up next. And then besides me, you'll hear Natasha, my partner in this conversation. So here it is, me, Natasha, and E-Team talking right here in the studio a couple weeks ago. It's coming, I promise. Here we go.
And since we could not meet any people anymore and do not be in any urban environments, the only place we would really could go was like a nearby park, which was kind of like a bigger park on a mountain, which really felt like a jungle. And we went there every day. And after a while, I thought, like, maybe if I relax my phone somehow, I can also relax this anxiety that I have towards the use of technology. So there's these, like, big tropical plants in this park that have these huge, strong leaves. And I thought, like, oh, maybe I should just put the phone onto the leaf and let it swing in the leaf and see what it does. And that's how it started for me, the whole project, that I kind of like felt my iPhone or my phone can experience what it means to be close in nature, it's good for my phone and then also good for me, or like for my idea of how I should relate to my phone.
Okay, so there's a tree, a phone swinging from a leaf in a tree, and this is what sets it all off?
I think there are different, you know, beginnings to a story, as there usually are. I think this is one beginning. I think the other also had to do with the reason why we were in Taiwan was to research puppetry, Chinese puppetry, and the relationship between puppetry and handheld digital devices. Because for us, the performance of either in the hands of an operator, be it, you know, someone using a phone or being a puppeteer, they're all telling stories with their hands and with their phones or with their devices, handheld devices. And so coming from that direction, we were also looking at how puppetry was performed, where was performed, what kind of use puppets had historically, and what kind of symbolic value, and maybe even beyond symbolic value, but an actual value that we don't know, in the terms of as them being substitutes for gods, or being used for gods, or being used to perform for gods. So having this kind of aura that that maybe the smart devices we have in our hands hold have similarly, because they also report back to another entity that is not just here, but somewhere beyond that. And so looking at that and then thinking like, oh, what do these things do, and where can we situate those things in a place where they will see things differently than if they were just held in our hands, if they could, if we could let them observe things, if we expose them to something, the same way as puppets are exposed in a temple fair to the gods, and gods are exposed to the performance of the puppets. How can we combine those two as well? So I think that is another part of the story, and they're not separate, they're not independent, but they're all part of our thinking and different explorations. And I think that's probably important to yeah.
You approach it almost passively a little bit, like you have these kind of tech scenes, if you will, with your devices in the wild or outside or in some environment that might attract someone or something, right? So what is that process like? I know you said that there's a variety of things and maybe even potentially no activity, but what happens at that point? Do you ever interact with insects directly? Do you ever prompt them in specific ways to kind of move in certain directions? These are the questions I have when I'm looking at the work. Like, how in the world?
Who is the insect the director? Wrangler?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, do they get meals? Like, what's going on? They seem so comfortable in their environment, and it's just kind of fascinating. I just wonder how much of it is staged, and maybe you don't want to divulge everything, but I'm fascinated by this.
I mean, the question is, what is staging, right? If you put a device somewhere next to an anthill and then ants start crawling over it, is that staged, or is that just providing a stage for the ants, you know, to go over? Could that be there, and, you know, by chance because it dropped out of your pocket? So I think it's more this, where we don't have an insect trainer who over there. We don't have a VIP where we're like, okay, go faster, faster. They're not. I would say that some are more responsive and more willing to cooperate with us, and, you know, act like performers, where they're like, wow, okay, you're looking at us, we're looking at you, okay, we all acknowledge it, each other's presence. And others are totally on their own, doing their own thing. Others are not doing anything at all, and we're like, okay, good, you don't want to play along, we don't want to, we don't have to, you know, so we all move on. I think it's really like a figuring out what happens, what goes, and making, providing options for all, you know, things that seem interesting for us, seem that we discover, things that we see, creating, you know, opportunities maybe for others to explore, experiment as well.
I think like some of the bigger animals, we got to know each other and we learned their behavior. Like we have a well, and it's always like filled with water, and around this like a spring. And it's like a this hole filled with water, and there are always like frogs and toads around it. And because they jump into the water, like how you put a little floaty in there, like a styrofoam, piece of styrofoam with like a wood on top, so that they have a little platform where they can jump on, because sometimes when the water level goes low, they cannot jump out anymore. So they, yeah, this is like a little thing we provided them to be happy in this spring or in this pond.
Not be trapped, yeah.
Yeah, and not be trapped. And then at one point we thought like, well, the styrofoam floaty is already there. What happens if we put a semiconductor on top? And so like, you know, like after a day, instead of like hopping onto the styrofoam, they hopped onto the semiconductor. And it didn't matter so much to them, I guess, if it was styrofoam or if it was a semiconductor.
Or lily pad.
Similar with like the snakes, for example, they're kind of like curious, and because we have a lot of stone walls around our house, we have a lot of like goddess snakes, and we interact with them because when we leave the house, like we often almost step on them. And so we are very aware of them, and we, you know, talk to them, I guess, kind of like. And they are curious. So like when you show them a flickering iPhone, I'm not sure what they're seeing, but they're seeing definitely eventually a reflection of themselves. I guess that's my understanding. My perception. And then they're reacting to that because it's kind of like mind-blowing to them, I assume, to see a reflection of themselves in this shiny surface. But maybe they're seeing something else too. And so it takes a lot of patience. But it's also kind of like really rewarding and sometimes really exhausting because it's intense to wait for an insect. They have like a completely different timeline. They operate on different timelines, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some too, I felt like, because you asked, I feel like some are avoiding whatever you offer and others are like really curious and are like jumping at it and looking at it, exploring it, and like interfaces start to move and they start to interact with it. So it varies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an official list of throughout all the videos how many different animals and insects show up?
I have no idea because like sometimes I'm like not even sure if that's an insect or
right. I wondered if there are things you can't identify
in a different category
snakes and insects, right?
Yeah.
Lizards,
frogs,
toads,
and toads,
mm-hmm. Lizards, newts,
mosquito larvae, lots of larvae, all kinds of larvae,
slugs. Yeah.
Then these animals
spiders.
That walk over the water.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
they're in number 12. Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds of like centipedes. And
stink bugs.
Moth. All kinds of moth in different stages.
Earthworms.
Yeah. I mean, what's really interesting and rewarding is that we often zoom in with our video camera. So it feels like we are on a one and one level because they're suddenly really, really big. And that is kind of like sometimes very intense, but also very rewarding because like even like an earthworm becomes like, wow, what an interesting creature, or like how much agency there is for this earthworm to go under the earth. For example, I remember like I had like my cell phone, I put it on a rock and then I put the earthworm next to it and the earthworm would always go under the iPhone. And I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense because it's an earthworm. They go under. I'm like, why don't you go on top? Wouldn't that be cool to check it out? But then first I was disappointed. I'm like, oh, that's too bad. It would be much cooler if the earthworm would go over the phone. But then once I let it happen, the earthworm went under the phone. And because I had placed it on a rock, it moved the phone and the phone slid down the rock. And I was kind of like, wow, this earthworm has a lot of power. It just moved this iPhone.
So are you always shooting on a tripod? Because one of the things that's so incredible is like things move through your lens, through your frame. You don't ever move with it, or at least in the videos I've seen, which Natasha and I were talking about earlier today is, I mean, from an editing perspective, it's really wonderful, I bet, for you because it's easier in some ways. But also from a viewing perspective, it's incredible to see all of the things come through to you, all these, you know, centipede pans, and instead of having actual movement of your camera.
So far, everything's proper.
Yeah, and I think like it has to do with like us being not as patient as these insects. So the tripod and the insect, they have like they have like the same sort of like patience that we don't have. So, I think that is something that we kind of like learned.
I mean, I think that there, yes, this is one, I know that sometimes I had the camera running for like 20 minutes because I thought, okay, nothing's happening now before everything was busy. So let's see. And then I do something else and come back after 20 minutes and this thing is buzzing, you know, all of a sudden it's like, so I think that's one opportunity to put on a tripod. But then also, because as Franti mentioned, working in this close proximity, like the focal point is such, you have such a short focal range. So like it takes so much time to set it up properly and knowing that, okay, this here, we have these whatever, you know, 1 or 2 inches of focus. So if you move the camera, then everything is out again. So that I think is part of that as well, that we like, okay, we have to set it up and don't touch it anymore and then just hope. And then sometimes it still happens. You're like, oh gosh, it's like either whatever you wanted to move through or was hoping to move through moves off the focus and why not a little closer to the camera or a little further away or something like that. But yeah.
So in addition to the animals, right, the species, all these different things that are moving across the frame, you also have intercut images of buildings, right, like, you know, skyscrapers and things like this. And so it's really interesting to see how there's this tension's the wrong word. I think it's more of a dialectic between things that are moving through the frame, like helicopters and airplanes and other things. I don't know. Can you talk about how you're balancing those types of imagery within this setup?
Well, originally, one of our questions that kind of like motivated this project was like to figure out the essence of like our technology and how we can relate to it, how we can relax it, how we, as I mentioned in the beginning. And because we started this project in Taiwan and because we also worked with we kind of like developed the initial ideas like with another collective, LOLOLOL, they're like two artists from Taipei, Cheryl and Xia, we kind of like wanted to know like what is the essence of our tech devices. And because we were in Taiwan, which is like one of the most important and still biggest production place for semiconductors, which are kind of like the brain parts of our technological devices, we thought like maybe the semiconductors brings us closer to the essence. So we ordered these wafers and got like 10 different wafers. These are these round
silicon,
very, very thin and very fragile plates, basically. And when you look at the structure on them...
The circuits printed on them, yeah.
Yeah, there's like electrical circuits printed on them. And the structure really looks like the structure of most big, new, contemporary, high-rise buildings. It's basically a grid. Everything mm-hmm. is very grid-based. So our interest was like a question of scale. Like we are living in this grid-based environment as humans. Like when we are living in these like urban scenarios, when we are interacting with like a big, like when you go to Hudson Yards in New York, like, and you're standing there and you look up at that, there's like a certain similarity of like having an ant crawling over a semiconductor, not just in visual terms, but like also in the experience. So that is kind of like where we, I guess, try to understand or like try to make a connection that everything is like a part of a bigger system, and that it's maybe sometimes just kind of like like a matter of scale to see the similarities.
I think the scale is the fascinating part as well. It's really to see like, oh, you think it's very small or this is very big. And because as a human, you tend to be more impressed by something that's big than something that's very small. Bring something that's very small and you record very close up with a camera and you juxtapose or put this, you know, in through editing next to something that was very big in terms of the building, just shows how equal they are actually, you know, and that what we perceive as bigger and more powerful maybe isn't in fact. So, you know,
the other thing that's kind of like still fascinating to me is like filming these big facades, for example, at Hudson Yards, what is mind-blowing is like how much human effort and how much human labor went into building these structures. And then you stand in front of it and you zoom in and a part of it, and there is nothing happening. If there is no reflection from the clouds, if the sun is not basically reflecting in the windows, these are dead surfaces. And it's mind-blowing because this never happens when you point your camera into any natural environment. Even if we put a semiconductor for 10 minutes out into the grass or onto the ground, someone will come and crawl over it, or some leaf will come and blow. Something will happen. It rains, anything. But it was kind of like depressing in a strange way to think like, wow, we built these like tombstones, and it's really uninteresting to look at them because nothing's happening. Everything is sealed, and maybe it's happening behind, but it was no real way to find visual interest in the surface.
We have this one shot that I remember that we did in Brussels, I believe, of like, I can still don't know what it is, but there was a skyscraper and we filmed upwards and there was this like tree sprouting out of a skyscraper and it looked so bizarre. You have the like a line going up with a grid and all the windows, and like as it would be a ruin, you know, where like some seedling comes out of it. I still don't know.
But it was the only thing that was moving, right?
I know.
Yeah.
Nothing else was moving.
So like you ask yourself, like, why do we build these like unmoving things for ourselves? Like, why?
But I think that has to do with efficiency. You know, like if you think of those buildings, are all probably are inspired by Bauhaus, by the Bauhaus movement for efficient, cost efficient, energy efficient, whatever efficient, you know, like economic, putting many people together in cubes. The same is true for the semiconductors. The efficiency of putting as much circuits as possible on, you know, the small wafer, you know, and even more, and the more you can put them there, the faster the processor can run, and the faster, let's call it faster, our technologies will be, and the more, the more we can sell of those, or can be sold of those. So there's also this, I think, this grit, the efficiency of the grid.
I have a question about collaboration. So how long has E-Team been around?
A long time. the name is probably not as old as our collaboration is, I would say. We collaborated, I think we started collaborating maybe in 1998. Is that right? About that time, yeah. And then as E-Team, us two started to collaborate in 2002, maybe, yeah. So.
And so what's it like to collaborate? Natasha and I talk about this all the time because we try to collaborate as much as possible, but certainly not to the scale you two are doing. I just wonder what that's like.
I'm curious, like, why do people ask this question? why not? Like, everyone is working together with someone else to some degree, right? Like, if you have a job, you have colleagues or something like that. So, like, why is it in this creative field, like, a question? Like, I would not say, Natasha, how can you work together with colleagues when you're teaching? Or,
I think it's how do you work together?
Yeah. So maybe. Yeah. Maybe it's certainly not why, because it works.
I don't think it's why. I don't think anyone.
But maybe it's how.
How?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Which you probably asked.
I don't know.
You asked in the first
maybe
place.
Not.
And you got that answer, which I always have. Right.
So you can answer.
Oh, that's not my. You answer the why, the not answering. I'm not answering the why, and I have to answer the how. How do you work together? I think that's part of our practice, actually. I mean, we had an artist statement, which still holds true to a certain degree, that collaboration is our artistic practice, in a way. So it's not something that's fixed, that's like that's prescribed, that that's this way or that way, but it changes and it varies. It for us, I think it changes from day to day, from project to project, from year to year, in terms of, you know, how responsibilities, communication and all of that. But then also we go beyond, and then, you know, meeting with puppeteers and seeing, oh, how can we collaborate? You know, so what are ways to collaborate outside of that? You know, what are ways to collaborate that we all don't speak the same language? You know, how can we communicate then in order to make collaboration happening? And so I think for us, this is part of the practice of the of the of the making art. You know, that it's not something that's there, but something that we are working on. And so there, I don't think that the how has a finite answer. I can give you that.
I guess for us, it's more interesting to always have like another perspective, and have to kind of like talk it through, and have like at least like one other angle to your own. As Hayo mentioned, I think we are trying to expand it as much as we can to have like even more angles, because that the world is so big and there's so much variety. It would be limiting to, it feels kind of like limiting to explore only one perspective. And it feels more liberating to step into different points of views, or imagine them at least. How much it is possible is not even clear, but at least the attempt is to some degree exciting. Yeah. So.
And complicated. We like to make things complicated. So doing this together also makes things sometimes more complicated.
That's the team part.
How about you guys? How do you work together?
Well, primarily we edit each other.
Yeah, so we pretty much read everything that each other writes, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know for me that's very helpful. And we're both very good editors, and we're also happy to be very honest,
mm-hmm.
Which is really important, mm-hmm. That you have an editor who is willing to push back or to offer advice or criticism. I have a problem with commas, which doesn't sound like a huge problem, but I think it might be. And Natasha has been working.
Comma police.
Yep. She's been working for a while to try to get me fewer commas in my sentences. So that's one way we work together.
Yeah, we have a lot of discussions. We just discuss everything. And so I feel like our collaboration is also just in terms of ideas and thinking mm-hmm. through different things, different concepts, things that I'm trying out or whatever, just ideas. So we do a lot of that. It's like unofficial collaboration.
We're also good at collaborating on projects. Maybe not creative projects, but we're good at, we both work very hard, and we know
like house projects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's really good, because I think if one of us were not in, I don't know, I think we're a good team in that sense.
Yeah.
Like today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was E-Team. I really enjoyed that. And I really liked how Franzi threw it back right at Natasha and I at the end. So that was our conversation about collaboration and E-Team's new project, which is called Our Non-Understanding of Everything. You can see this multi-channel video installation right now in Catskill at Create Gallery on Main Street. And I should say, of course, this is co-organized by our very own Wave Farm. Thank you to E-Team, Franzi and Io. We really enjoyed the access to their work over the last year, but also getting the chance to see it erupt into the world last weekend. I don't know if that's the right word. I think it might be, though. So go see the show. The main video installation has actually changed every week. So between now and mid-November, you can go 4 times or so and see new work. So please do that. Thanks to E-Team and to Natasha, of course. Let's listen to the rest of this track. This is Hiroshi Yoshimura, Something Blue. That was Hiroshi Yoshimura, the track Something Blue from the album Surround. which is almost 50 years old now. Speaking of 50, this is the 50th episode of Ginger Radio Hour. We've been doing it now for 2 years, I guess that makes sense. Twice a month. First and third Tuesday. Yeah. Of each month, 10 a.m. So thank you so much for listening the last couple of years. Thank you for listening today. We do this live on WGXC, ACRA 90.7 FM. And since this show is all about collaboration and teams, I want to dedicate it to Natasha, my number one collaborator. Tomorrow's our 20th anniversary. So here we go. Here's a song for Natasha.
His arms are